Good evening, and I'm going to highlight some of the things that have already been covered. In particular, just a few things about Mississippi. We historically lead the nation in the rate of infant deaths, and as the previous presenter noted, we're not alone in that. The other southeastern states are in the same situation as us. 8 of the 11 highest infant mortality rates in the U.S. are among southeastern United States. The leading causes for these events is birth defects, low birth weight and prematurity, sudden infant death syndrome, maternal complications during pregnancy, and accidents. Our infant mortality rate, similar to what was previously discussed, we kind of hit a plateau, and just over the last few years have seen a slight decline. We do know our 2012 number now. The 2011 number here, a total infant mortality rate of 9.4 infant deaths per 1,000 live births. In 2012, a historic low for the state is our 8.9 infant deaths per 1,000 live births, which sounds really high to some people, but that's big news to us. We're so glad to be out of those two-digit numbers. By age at death, the vast majority, more than 60% during the neonatal period. We do see the highest rate for those less than 37 weeks of gestation. By birth weight, by far the highest rate of infant deaths are among the very low birth weight category. We have high rates of smoking in Mississippi at 26.6%, according to our 2010 PRAMS data. We do a pretty good job of getting mothers to quit smoking during pregnancy. Unfortunately, the vast majority of them go right back to it after pregnancy. And exclusive back sleep positioning, we have we don't do very well with this either. For the state total, only just barely over 60% of mothers say that they always put their baby on their back to sleep. There's some variations between different groups. It's kind of the same in the age groups. Black versus white, there is a disparity there. Just over half of black always place their babies on their back to sleep. Less than high school versus high school or higher education, it's about the same. A disparity between non-married versus married, and a huge disparity between Medicaid-covered births. We also lead the nation in the rate of pregnancy-associated maternal deaths, and I can tell you a little bit about those that occurred in 2011. In 2011, we actually had the highest number we've had since back in the 70s. In 2010, we had 10 maternal deaths. In 2011, we almost doubled that number up to 19. And so we've begun to do a CDC-based PAMR, the Pregnancy-Associated Mortality Review format, to look at some of those deaths. What we know about them, it's 2/3 of them are among the black population. By age, it's across the board. We have some that occur in the teenage years. The vast majority are during the 20s, which happens to also be where the majority of the births occur, just during that age group, and they occur on up to age 50. Maternal death by years of education. In this group in 2011, we did have two that had not completed high school, and that was because they were still in high school. And about half of them had at least 12 years or a GED, and some were all the way on up into graduate school. Maternal deaths by occupation, just one or two unemployed. A couple were the high school students. They had not yet entered the employment and workforce. One disabled. The others, even one that was employed in health care. Maternal causes of death, the most common reasons are related to respiratory, particularly pulmonary embolism, blood clot in the lungs, cardiovascular events, cardiac arrest, cardiac decompensation, those type of events, and infections. Maternal deaths by payer source, every woman that was in this particular cohort had a way to pay, with the largest cohort being covered by Medicaid. And maternal deaths by BMI category, I know that you've heard that Mississippi leads the nation in the rate of obesity, and that certainly influences our birth outcomes. We only had one in this group that was less than a normal birth weight, normal weight before pregnancy. Only one that had a normal weight, one that was merely overweight with a BMI, two that were merely overweight with a BMI between 25 and 29.9. Almost half of them were in the 30s as far as BMI, a few in the 40s, one in the 50s, and we even had one member of the cohort that had a three-digit BMI, a BMI greater than 100. So we're working on a birth outcomes improvement initiative, best health and best care for every mother and every baby. We are part of the federal movement for the COIN, Mississippi's COIN, to reduce infant mortality. We have six strategies that we're working on. Interconception care for mothers. Obviously, the women's health is a real issue for the not only for the mother, but for the infant as well. Smoking cessation in pregnancy and continuing that cessation after pregnancy, access to 17P therapy to reduce preterm births, safe sleep practices, perinatal systems of care, formerly known as perinatal regionalization, and reducing our elective deliveries to less than 39 weeks. Of course, these things can't be accomplished without money. So we've asked the legislature for money, and $1.5 million is what we're asking for this year. And to a lot of states, that doesn't sound like a lot of money, but it's a big amount of money in Mississippi. And certainly the legislature's pat reply when you make a request like that is, what is the return on investment? What's this going to do for us if we give you this money to work on these strategies for infant mortality? So they give you maybe a week to turn that around, and so it's certainly not an opportunity to do a full-scale cost-effective analysis, a cost return on investment analysis, and have true financial data. So the way that we went about doing this was to do a relevant literature review to find established literature for financial indicators related to these negative birth outcomes that we experience the highest rates of infant mortality. And we applied those financial figures to Mississippi vital statistics data. And what we see is that so the data that we primarily focused on was the 2011 data. Mississippi women and families, we had 6,582 preterm births, 4,705 low-weight babies, and 777 infants were either stillborn or died before their first birthday. So based on the financial projections presented, we focused efforts to reduce preterm birth by 8%, and that 8% is associated with that ASTHO challenge to reduce premature births, the 2012 ASTHO President's Challenge to reduce preterm births by 8%. In Mississippi, if we made this investment of at least $1 million, that we could see an overall savings of $15 million in excess medical cost, about $2 million saved per extra week of pregnancy, about $5 million for a $1 million investment in a high-risk pregnancy care program. So how did we calculate that? So here's the late evening math test. Using the IOM report from 2007 described the first year medical costs for inpatient and outpatient average of 10 times greater for preterm births. That's an excess of 32,325 more than full-term births. Suggest excess cost of about $29,000 per preterm birth. So if we met that ASTHO challenge of calls reducing by 8%, the excess cost of preterm birth for the total preterm births in Mississippi, which were over 6,500 of those, it would be an excess cost of preterm birth in Mississippi of $191 million. That's a lot of money. If you apply that to Medicaid, the number of Medicaid preterm births, the number of preterm births covered by Medicaid, that would be a savings of $116 million for the Medicaid program. So potential savings from that 8% would be more than 15 million savings for the state and more than 9 million savings for Medicaid. Jones et al. In 2002 compared what the difference it would make if a baby was born at 34 weeks, or if you could make it extend it just one more week to 35 and just one more week to 36. Every week counts. Every week is less expensive, less morbidity, less mortality. And it comes out to mean nursery costs of about $8,000 versus $6,000 versus $5,000 in the 36th week. In Mississippi, we had 34-week births, 839 of those. That was an excess cost of about $7 million. If we could get those births to hang on just one more week by a strategy like the 17P injections, that would be an excess cost of only about $5 million. And if we can get them to hang on just two more weeks, it would be an excess of only $4 million. So really savings of $2 to $3 million in that category. Russell et al. In 2007 looked at preterm birth and low birth weight hospitalizations. They averaged $14,000 more, about $600 for full-term births versus $15,000 for the low birth weights per hospital stay, an excess cost of $14,000 per complicated newborns. When you apply that to Mississippi's low birth weight number of 4,700, that's the excess cost of low birth weight in Mississippi of $68 million. Potential state savings from that 8% reduction would be $5.4 million. And if you apply that to the Medicaid-covered births, that is a Medicaid cost of low birth weight in Mississippi of $41 million. An 8% reduction would realize $3.3 million savings for Mississippi Medicaid. So just looking at how easy this would be to do in other states, our neighboring state, Tennessee, it was one of the other red states on that lovely map. In Tennessee, for 2011, they had 7,169 preterm births. That was an excess cost of low birth weight in Tennessee of more than $100 million. An 8% reduction for Tennessee of low birth weight would be an $8.5 million savings. For Medicaid, in about 49% of Tennessee births are covered by Medicaid. That's 3,500 low birth weight births. An excess Medicaid cost to Tennessee Medicaid of about $50 million. An 8% reduction would be a savings of about $5 million. So these are really easy to do. If you have that, you need that short-term turnaround to be able to show some return on investment for very reliable literature findings. And that's my quick ending. So we're ready to move on to the fourth.